All right, folks, back on the Boss Man Show here with Jared Dubin here, CBS NFL reporter. Also, he's about to date for the NBA stuff. Jared, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm great, man. Just trying to figure out why Jerome Boger, an Atlanta native, a Morehouse graduate, screwed the Falcons on Sunday in Tampa with Grady Jarrett just sacking the quarterback.
Yeah, I saw that Perry Fuel, who's like the vice president of officiating now, came out this morning and was like, yeah, we think that was a good call. The league basically will just never admit a mistake with these kind of things. Like a few years ago with all the pass interference stuff, they wouldn't admit a mistake with that. Then they came out the next year and were like, we're going to make pass interference reviewable, but every time we review it, we're going to like purposely make the wrong decision so that nobody wants this anymore. I feel like they're going to do the same thing with roughing the passer next year.
No doubt, Jared. You know, since Al Riveron's gone now, who's actually over replay now?
I don't know who's in charge of replay, actually. I know Perry Fuel is like the vice president of officiating, but I'm not actually sure who's like in charge of replay on game days.
Yeah, because I know that was like I always knew it was Blandino. It was Al Riveron. Now it's like, who is the guy? You know what I miss, Jerry, is when we had Mike Pereira, but then they were putting out videos saying this was a good call, it was a bad call. But like you said, it's like the league office now is like, we're not getting anything.
I think they still do those on occasion, but this one was like a memo sent to the teams, I think, which I don't know. Like, they just need to have someone on game days that's like in the booth or in the league office or wherever that very quickly says, like, no, that penalty is wrong.
Yes. Because let's be honest, Jared, with gambling being involved now, you need to have these calls correct. People's money on the line right now.
Like, you know, you're going to get calls wrong every once in a while, but when it's like, when it's something that is just like made up, like, I don't know. It's like, oh, well, I thought this was a hold, but it turns out that he let go quick enough for it not to be a hold. Like, whatever, that happens. With stuff like this, where it's like a roughing the passer that is just a phantom call, or, you know, a pass interference where a dude's feet get tangled. Like, I don't know. It seems like it should be easier than the league makes it.
No doubt. And I told this. Many fans who are fans of the Falcons, this is Jared. I'm not saying the Falcons win the game and score. We just give them a chance. They're going to punt the ball.
Some of that is like, you know, if you look at the play before, there should have been a pass interference, so it wouldn't have mattered anyway. So it's like, I don't like to zero in on one call and say, you know, this team wins or this team gets a chance. Like, for the most part, calls come out in the wash team-wise, even within the context of a specific game. But also, you can't get calls that obvious, that egregiously wrong. Like, they shouldn't have missed the pass interference on the previous play, and they shouldn't have called roughing the passer on that play. Like, both of those calls need to be gotten correct. Like, I kind of view the refs, from my perspective, as like an act of God. Like, the refs are going to get calls wrong at some point.
No doubt.
Some of them are going to go against your team. Some of them are going to go for your team. Everybody thinks their team gets the worst of it. Everybody's wrong because every team gets screwed at some point. But like, some calls are so bad and so obvious and seemingly at such a turning point in the game. Like, it's just as likely that a call in the first quarter could change the game as a call in the fourth quarter. But obviously everybody notices the ones at the end more. But I think that's just even more reason to figure out some way to get this stuff right.
And Boger did it against Josh Allen in Baltimore the week prior. You know, that call. So yeah. Boger is a roughing the passer kind of a guy. And so we need to have him, hey, Jerome, this is what it is, what it isn't, you know?
At a certain point also, like, Jerome Boger has been reffing games for, like, as long as I can remember, you know? Like, so many of these guys have been around forever. Like, I feel like you need some younger officials out there that can, you know, do the job a little bit better. But also then sometimes you get some of these young guys and it's like they're not experienced enough and they don't, you know the rules as well or miss some things or think they see some things. Like, it's hard to find a balance. But it's not a good situation, obviously.
No, that was about the Falcons roster. You know, the Falcons are 2-3. Marcus Mariota is dating, is doing what he can, but Falcons, you know, is rebuilding. We know they trade Deion Jones away to the Browns, seven round pick, get off the salary, dead cap next year. So, what are the thoughts of the Falcons roster being 2-3 so far this year in his rebuilding year, and what you've seen so far from the Atlanta Falcons?
I think they're more competitive in a game-to-game situation than I probably expected. Like, Arthur Smith knows what he's doing in terms of, like, creating efficient offense. I think that some of the ways that they're handling snap rates for key players, like Kyle Pitts was playing, like, 60-something percent of the snaps in a couple of games. Last week, Drake London was, like, 65% of the routes or whatever. Like, just have these guys out there on every play. The design of the offense is really good and gets more out of the talent than I think you would expect, especially considering the offensive line is, you know, no great shakes right now. It doesn't seem like they have that many foundational players yet. Obviously, it's a roster that's not necessarily in good shape, and it's going to take a while to build. In the meantime, being able to get more out of the talent on hand than you should is pretty good, because it gives you a sign that when you do have talent, you should be able to play well, but also it's not as good because, like, you want a higher draft pick. I don't think Mariota's playing particularly well throwing the ball, especially these last couple of weeks. He's doing a good job for the most part of avoiding sacks and scrambling. You know, he holds on to the ball a little bit too long. He's not necessarily going to create explosive plays on his own. They got to be schemed up for him. And so I feel like we have to see Desmond Ridder sooner or later, because the Falcons are going to have to make a decision whether or not to draft a quarterback this year. But, you know, in the meantime, like, I didn't necessarily think we should have seen Ridder in last week's game, because, like, the offensive line was getting kind of overwhelmed. He wasn't really going to be put in position to succeed with no Kyle Pitts out there. But at a certain point, I'm not sure when their bye week is, but I would try to get him in there, because you want to be able to get a clean evaluation by the end of the year. And to me, that probably means he should be starting, or at least getting a bunch of snaps sometime soon, because I don't think Mariota's taking them to the playoffs, taking them anywhere special. But I mean, I'm not overly concerned about, you know, this regime yet, because they just don't have the talent really to compete at a high level.
Yeah, and they were really hamstrung by the cap and bad contracts. I think last one, it was Deion Jones get rid of. I think they'll have a lot of cap space issues. I told some of the guys, that's how I feel, like, look, if you're a Falcon player this year, this is your chance to prove yourself to be worthy to be on this team next year. This is an open trial for you this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with that. You know, obviously the Matt Ryan dead cap hit is pretty big this year, the Deion Jones hit. But starting next year, you get a little bit more flexibility to build things out. Maybe you can, you know, move off of some other veterans that you don't necessarily want to keep around. But, you know, the foundation of the team for the future is going to be, you know, Kyle Pitts, Drake London, AJ Terrell, you know, and you got to find out if some of your other draft picks from these last 2 years can be foundational pieces, or if they're rotation pieces, or if they're going to be guys that need to stick around at all. And then you want to go back to, you know, the previous couple of drafts, the guys that are still on their rookie contracts, and see which of those guys, you know, you're going to want to give extensions, which of those guys you're going to want to move off of. That's sort of the phase that they're in right now. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, every team goes in cycles. Like, 2-3 years from now is the time that you want to be really competitive and start being like, okay, we're going to be a consistent playoff team from here on out. And if it doesn't look like that's going to be the case, that's when you have to start thinking about, like, all right, what are we doing here?
No doubt. As some of the fans here tell me, we need another receiver. I'm like, we'll have one next year in Ridley. That's another receiver we're going to get. It's like adding this agent and Calvin Ridley next year. Like, why are you all complaining about Zacchaeus and Edwards and Hodge? Like, look, next year we'll have Ridley to go with London and Pitts in the middle.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a good point. Obviously, you do need more than, like, two wide receivers to play. Arthur Smith is going to be a guy that uses more, like, two tight end and three tight end sets. So maybe not necessarily on his kind of team. You need four or five receivers. But we don't know what Ridley's going to look like when he comes back next year. At that point, he's going to have not played for a year and a half. Obviously, he's a really, really good player when he's on the field. And if he can recapture that, that's really good. But I don't think you should necessarily bank on, like, we've got 2020 Calvin Ridley out there along with Pitts and Drake London. But you do need to add something else to that mix to just to make sure that you've covered all your bases, I think.
No doubt. And I do feel like they should spend money on the O-line and free agency. I don't know who's available, but you gotta get the trenches taken care of too. So that's been the problem in Atlanta for a long time.
Whoever the quarterback is going to be, like, it's important to have not just, you know, the scheme and the play calling and, you know, a couple of high level pieces at important positions. Like, you got to build out the entire infrastructure. The interior of the offensive line, I think, is probably going to need to be built out a little bit more. You know, I think Jake Matthews is a pretty good left tackle, but also at this point, he may not necessarily align with the timeline of the foundational pieces of the team. Not that he's old, but, you know, he could be in his 30s by the time they're really good. So maybe that's something you have to consider, you know, a succession plan in the future, a couple of years down the line. But, I mean, it's going to take work. It's not a particularly good roster, like you said. They have some cap issues, but, you know, they've got their draft picks going forward. Maybe they could get, you know, a couple more in there if they decide some of the, you know, more veteran guys aren't going to be part of the next really good Falcons team. Like, I'm not concerned yet. Like, this was always going to be a couple of year process to change the roster over.
No doubt. And I know Arthur Smith bristles against the word tanking or losing games, but, you know, business-wise, it might be best to do so. I know he doesn't want to do it, but I feel like you should want the highest draft pick possible when you're a team like Atlanta. But I know why he wants to win games with record, of course, and the team morale. But business-wise, I would tank, per se.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice to set yourself up to get, you know, like C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young or whoever ends up being the top quarterback this year. I know that, you know, different people got different opinions. I tend to not watch these guys until the couple months before the draft, just because I don't have the bandwidth for that yet. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think they're going to be in pretty decent position. Like, I don't think they're going to have like the 17th pick in the draft or whatever, where they're like in the playoff conversation until the end of the season. I think it's more likely to be, you know, like around 6-10 range, 6-12 range, whatever it is. Just seems like the quality of the roster is not high enough for them to be picking lower than that. And it's not the best position to be in. You want to be at like number one or number two if you're going to get a quarterback. But also, you know, there's some other guys out there, or maybe you could try to move up, or, you know, we'll see what happens. But I feel okay about what they've been doing so far. Like, they've landed, I think, in the last three drafts, three like high quality players in the first round that are going to be foundational players for them. So that's a good sign.
Just with the NFC South to be so down, with Carolina being this bad, of course, firing Matt Rule this week, the Saints 2-3 as well. You expect the South to be down the way it is with three teams, with two teams 2-3, and the Panthers 1-4, and the Bucks kind of not playing as well as they could either.
Yeah, I mean, I was not nearly as high as other people on the Saints this year. I just didn't see it with Sean Payton leaving and with Jameis Winston being the quarterback and that defense getting a little bit older. So I'm not necessarily surprised that it looks like the Bucs and then everyone else again. I'm somewhat surprised that the Bucs haven't been that good yet, but I think you can attribute almost all of that to their injuries in the first few weeks of the season. I think we've seen the last 2 weeks that they're going to look much better when they have, you know, like Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, all these guys back on the field.
Yeah, Julio Jones is back to, you know, being injured, not practicing.
Man, like, I just want to see that dude play again. Like, he's so good, but just can't stay out there.
No doubt, man. So let me ask you this. We're going to NFL a little bit here with the Eagles. Did you see this 5-0 start coming for the Eagles? Did you think that hurts their quarterback of the future now, in your opinion?
I mean, I didn't see 5-0 necessarily. They got, I think, the second or third best point differential in the league, too. So, you know, it backs up them being one of the top teams in the league. I had them winning the NFC East, like a lot of other people did. I thought they were going to be better than the Cowboys, like a lot of other people did. Some of 5-0, like, you're not going to win every close game, So, you know, they could be 4-1, they could be 3-2. That wouldn't change, you know, how good of they are as a team. I think certainly the way Hurts has played this year, he looks like he's going to be their quarterback for quite some time. And I think that they've done a really good job of what I said the Falcons need to do in terms of building the infrastructure. Like, they made sure that there was going to be no doubt in their evaluation of Jalen Hurts this year, because they gave him a really good offensive line. They gave him two really good wide receivers in A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, who they went out and got these last couple of years. They have a really good tight end in Dallas Goedert. They have a good scheme. They have a good running game. Like, whatever happened this year, they were going to know whether Jalen Hurts was good or not. And you need to be in that position when you're evaluating a young quarterback. And I think they've done a really good job of that.
And I'm shocked that Ron Rivera threw Carson Wentz on the bus. That was shot quarterback.
I mean, I'm not surprised that Carson Wentz has played poorly enough that he's in position to be thrown under the bus. But I do expect sometimes Ron Rivera is a little more democratic, I guess, than that, or diplomatic, sorry, than that, usually. So I was surprised to see that too.
Yeah, and I'm like, Ron, your defense is trash.
Yeah, that defense, I thought it was going to be really good last year, and then they came out in probably the most disappointing individual unit in the league. Them or the Ravens defense, but that was more explainable by injuries. You know, Chase Young still is not back, but they've got some other players there. Like, Montez Sweat is good. Cam Curl is good. Jonathan Allen is really good. Like, they've got some players. They should not be this bad on defense. But I don't know. Jack Del Rio is still their defensive coordinator. That guy hasn't been coaching good defense in like 10 years. So I don't know.
No doubt. No doubt. And then looking at the NFC North, of like the Vikings are somehow 4-1.
Yeah, I don't get that.
It's like they have played like crap and got lucky, you know. But it's like, really, you know, the Vikings, I get Aaron Rodgers and the Packers struggling right now. Should have lost to the Giants, but the Giants is coaching. Hey, Brian Daboll is. This is just showing what we have a good coach. Mm-hmm. What coaching can do for a team. Coaching got them 4-1. Like, not talent.
It's a masterclass in coaching to your personnel. Like, he comes from the Bills. Their offensive coordinator Mike Kafka comes from the Chiefs, and this offense doesn't really look like either of those offenses because they don't have the quarterback to do that. They're running an offense that suits Daniel Jones. He's running the ball all the time. It's play action on like 40-something% of the dropbacks. Saquon is like the most heavily involved player, obviously, in the offense. Like, do I think they're a 4-1 quality team? No, obviously not. I'm pretty sure that they still have like a negative point differential or something like that. Like, they're not, they can't keep playing one score games all year and going 4-1. Like, that's just not going to happen. But being able to get better results than your talent level is a sign of good coaching.
Yeah, 100%. Masterclass in coaching, you know, and I'm seeing, like, I never thought this, Jared. I would see Geno Smith was actually playing better than Russell Wilson in Denver. The right call may have been keeping Geno Smith over Russell Wilson.
I can't believe it either. The Broncos are a mess, man, but I would much rather talk about what Geno Smith is doing. Like, some of it is somewhat unsustainable touchdown rates. Like, he's throwing like 7-8% of his passes as touchdowns, which just can't keep up. And they're like not running all that many plays per game. You know, their defense can't get off the field, so they have to keep scoring all these points. You know, who knows what the running game will look like now without Rashad Penny there, but he's playing at a really high level, man. It's not like he's getting lucky. He's making really good throws every week. Good for him. It reminds me, I guess, a lot of like Ryan Tannehill in Tennessee, where he was a guy who, you know, wasn't particularly good as a starter, got relegated to a backup. Like, they brought him in for basically nothing, and then all of a sudden everything comes together in this one year when he's like 30 years old. And if he can keep it up, like, he's going to get a contract, you know? Like, maybe not playing like, I think he's like third in EPA per play or something like that. I don't think he's going to keep that up. But if he's, you know, 10th to 15th in the league, like, that's a good quarterback.
No doubt. We've seen some bad quarterback already in this league already. And I will say this, Matt Ryan looks like he got old and slower overnight. in Indianapolis. The line ain't good either. But let's look at older and slower too.
Last year, I wasn't sure how much of his like big step backward was him not being able to either move or really get the ball downfield. How much of it was just the situation and, you know, the conservative nature of the offense for a lot of last year. It looks like it was probably a combination of both. He doesn't look good. But that offensive line in Indianapolis has been really disappointing, not playing as well as it has over the last few years. Like, even Quentin Nelson hasn't been quite as good this year as he has for, you know, the significant majority of his career. The left tackle situation is a major issue. They've had their receivers out a couple of times, but he just looks cooked, man.
Yeah, and Mike Tomlin's going to go his first losing season, in my opinion. He's depending on Matt Canada, who wasn't good in college as a coordinator. I know the other line there is terrible too, but you got to, like we talk about Daboll, scheme to what you have. Quick passes to be, that answer your running game, you know. But Matt Canada's doing what Matt Canada does, everywhere he goes, just not being productive. Yeah,
just keep running like 3 jet motions per snap. That'll work eventually.
Exactly. Like, what are we doing, Mike Tom? Get rid of this guy. So, you know, and Brissett came down here to Atlanta, you know, and, you know, blew it. You know, like Brissett, like he plays well for about most of the game, but he makes about 2 or 3 dumb mistakes. Like he could have ran that ball for a touchdown.
He is the first down, at least. Backup quarterback. Like if you need somebody to fill in for a game or two, you feel really good about him. If you need somebody to start long term, you don't feel that good about him.
He proves it to us every freaking week. Every week.
And every draft he's been in too, you know, in New England, in Miami, in Indianapolis, like we've seen the same thing. Like if you need somebody to like hold you steady for a couple games, fine. But if you need him to start for a long period of time, it's probably not going to work out that well.
No doubt. I got a couple for you, brother. Brandon Staley, that call on 4th-and-1. I think he's going to get himself fired doing this stuff. Eventually.
I would say like it's somewhat more understandable because their defense hadn't looked all that good, particularly in the second half. They had let Cleveland march down a couple of times. And it's a situation where like I feel like it was closer to 4th-and-2 than 4th-and-1. So the models maybe didn't necessarily know that and recommending as strongly that they go for it. But in a situation where like if you convert, the game is over. It's a little bit more understandable than like a situation where if you convert, but you still need to do more to win the game. My thing is, they call the same thing every time on these 4th-and-1 or 2s. Like it's stick to one side and a slant on the other. And it's like you're throwing like a hitch route or a quick out or a quick slant against the opposing team's best corner every time. And the other teams know that. Like, call literally anything else, and I get it. But if they're going to keep calling the same thing and defenses know it's coming, you're dropping the odds of conversion from whatever you think they are to something much less.
No doubt. No doubt. It's so funny, you know, seeing them do this stuff right here. And the hat I have on, last one, the Raiders hat I have on today to match my nice black, just a pullover coat today. Talk about that, man, McDaniels thing, man. So going for 2, could have rather than tying the game up. This is the whole Josh McDaniels and Oakland experience, well, not Las Vegas, experience so far right now.
Yeah, so I've heard it explained sort of 2 ways. The first is that, you know, obviously you get the lead. Basically, if you don't think you're the better team, then trying to make sure that the game ends in regulation, no matter what, might be an optimal strategy, which I kind of understand. Like, the Raiders clearly were not the better team in that game. So going for 2 and taking a lead and being like, well, let's try to play some defense. And if Kansas City gets super aggressive and goes down and scores, then, you know, maybe we'll get the ball back for one more shot, which is kind of what happened to them, even though they didn't convert. So from that sense, I understand it. But if it was like, if you're going to do that, you do that with 27 seconds left, not 4 minutes and 27 seconds left. There's just way too much time for Mahomes to go down the field to score, even if you do take the lead. I do understand wanting to avoid overtime against that team, though, when you are not the better team. I just think it's much more of an optimal strategy with less time on the clock.
No doubt. Well, Jared, thank you for your time. We're just getting down the road, but it was fun to talk football with you, my guy. Check out my CBS NFL writer, Jared Dubin, the Boss Man Show. Be safe, brother. Talk to you soon, man.
Thanks for having me, man. Have a good one.
Anytime, brother.